W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tire. E-Range EV tires are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tire with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetires.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E-Tires.com to find your EV's next set of tires.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for March 17th, 2023. This is episode number 154. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the Kia EV9 design reveal, Volkswagen ID2 All concept debut, and the opening of the first V4 Tesla supercharger site, and much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's editor and forum moderator, as well as the host of the new channel, YouTube channel, Drive Electric with Dominic. Joining us today is the most distinguished gentleman, Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel, State of Charge. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic Practically Palatial Halls of Auto Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. Welcome, everybody.
Morning.
Good morning.
Morning,
and
guys.
This morning, I believe your Palatial Auto Spec Studios is located in Austin, Texas.
It's a tiny home in Austin, Texas.
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh, really? And it's been awesome. It's so cool.
Oh, is it like a Airbnb or something?
Yep. Well, came for South by Southwest. And of course, like the whole city was booked up. And so decided to look on Airbnb. And for like $600 for a whole week, we got a tiny home in this tiny home community.
Oh.
And it's been awesome. It's so neat.
Well, that's pretty cool. I have a friend has like a, or who was living in a little place like that, you know, like a little plaid neighborhood of like tiny houses. It's like, it's the coolest thing. I love it. All right. So I guess let's kick this thing off with what we've been driving this week and then get to some news. So Tom, we talked about this the past couple of weeks a little bit, but finally your video of the tour of the studio and interview with GM's VP of EV ecosystem, Haas Hassani, is now live. So maybe explain to the new listeners real quick what EV Live is, and then maybe tell us what your big takeaways from your discussions are.
So yeah, EV Live is a new online, it's a one-way video service now. They're going to expand it to two-way, but right now it's one-way. You can see the GM EV specialist, they can't see you. And they're basically there to answer any of your questions. They set up a studio outside of Detroit with all different charging stations, DC fast chargers, home charging equipment, GM vehicles. Now they're obviously there to sell GM vehicles, but not specifically, not, you know, it's not a hard sell, and they don't actually, that's wrong. They're not there to sell the vehicles. They're to sell EV, and they don't really talk about like, a specific vehicle unless you ask. You say, look, I really want to have a Bolt. Okay. They can drill down on all the details on the Bolt. But if you're there just to ask them questions about electric vehicles, like, you know, listen, I'm thinking about getting one of these things, but I need to drive 500 miles once a month to go to my grandma's house or whatever. How do I deal with that? And they could talk about, you know, finding public charging stations and how you use them. Common questions that seem to be major pain points in people transitioning to electric vehicles. A lot of it's centered around charging, let's face it. But they ask them questions about, you know, battery life and even, you know, the personal thermal question about recycling. What happens if these are going to end up in landmines? They'll explain why they won't. I think it's a great service. And I think this is something that's long overdue. Educating the public is going to be an enormous piece of the puzzle in electric vehicle adoption. And we've known this for a long time. Inside EV's community and the people here, a lot of stuff entry to them, but you got to understand we're still electric vehicle adoption in the US, I think was at 6% last year, which is tremendous because I remember the days where we're like half of 1%. So it's increasing rapidly, but you got to understand still probably 80% of the country does not understand anything about electric vehicles, how you charge them. Can you plug them into a regular household outlet? What type of charging equipment do you need? Do they go on fire? Like, are they safe to charge in the rain? And so they set up this site. It's called EV Live. And basically there's somebody there. And the good thing about it, it's not just a phone call. You see the person and they have their iPad and they can show you the charger and they can hold up a connector and say, this is what you plug into your car. And this is how you do it. When you go to unplug the car, you have to push this tab and pull it out. And that it kind of normalizes it. So it's a great service. And I think other manufacturers are going to launch similar services as the years go on, because I think they're going to realize they have to, and they don't want their customers learning everything from GM.
Right. I mean, it's a great way to also to educate customers, but it's also a kind of sneaky way to maybe, get on a customer, recruit potential customers, I guess. Right. Does it make them like, if they are answering your questions and stuff, just with with lots of candor and transparency and they're just being there for you and answering your questions. So you just build some sort of trust, relationship with the brand, I think.
Yeah, that 100%, you might go there with every intention of buying a Mustang Mach-E, let's say, and you just found this online, you did searches on electric vehicle information, I have questions about EVs, this site pops up, you go in, and all of a sudden you're talking to them for a while, and they're like, we have an electric Equinox coming out in 8 months, and you might want to hold off. I don't know if that's going to be how they run it. I mean, I think I would, if I were there, I would offer, all the information possible, but then obviously you want to kind of herd people towards your products. That's your business to make money, but they are there to answer questions and not do a hard sell. If you're talking about other products, of course they won't know the onboard charger speed of a Porsche Taycan or something. They won't be able to answer technical questions about the other brands, but they'll be able to answer general questions on how you road trip with one and so forth. And they were pretty adamant about not being a hard sell. And I talked to them a lot about it. I talked to Haas Hassani, as you mentioned, a lot about it. I talked to the EV specialists in the room. Okay. I talked to all the specialists that were there. That's why, if you did watch the video, later on in the video, I had my friend Pete call in, because I think they were expecting me to do this like a secret shopper, and they would immediately know it was me. So I had my friend call in, and I recorded that as he was asking basic questions about charging and so forth. And they did a pretty good job. There were a couple things I mentioned that I would have maybe done a little better, but that's me. I'm famous for my critiquing things when people don't ask me to critique them. But I think they did overall a good job. There's one thing I will point out. When I was in the studio, they have a DC fast charger, and they were showing me, we show that we have a CHAdeMO connector. So if people have questions about CHAdeMO, they go to an Electrify America charging station. They want to know, why is that blue connector? What's that for? We can explain that's for this. And I said, well, why isn't there a Tesla connector here? And it was kind of like, a little bit of a break of silence. And I said, look, if you really want to be brand neutral, you got to get a supercharger in here with the magic dock, because your customers are going to be going to those stations.
It's true.
And if you really want to show people how to charge, you're going to show them how to use a CCS station, how they can't use a CHAdeMO station, but then how to use magic dock on Tesla, because your customers are going to use that. And, it's kind of, I know Tesla's the big 800-pound gorilla in the room, and no one wants it. It's like saying Voldemort when you say Tesla at another OEM. But I was saying that to upper management, Haas and some of the people there, and they all kind of were like, that's really not a bad idea. And they seem genuinely accepting that.
Sure.
So let's see, maybe we'll see that that get added to the studio.
Right. That was a good point, actually. Yeah, the Magic Dock, you know, it's never been really been seen before by anybody. No one has much experience with it. And, you know,
I'm sure Tesla won't give them one. So that might be hard for them to get one. But what they could do is shoot video of them using one in the public and then have, because they have video screens and everything at EV Live, they could have a video demonstration next to their DC fast charger. And they could say, and if you do need to use a Tesla supercharger, this is how it's done. And you could watch the video, you know, you do your app and the connector releases. So they could do that. And I think they should, to be honest with you. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. And hopefully they take that advice.
Right on.
I really enjoyed that video. Sorry, because I just wanted to mention, I also saw Haas Hasani this week at South by Southwest and attended one of his panels that he was on. And first of all, that dude rocks. He totally gets it. And thought he did a great job in your interview, Tom, and was, you know, realistic and open and not very GM heavy. He was, you know, this is what we're trying to do. He was very open about everything. I love the interview with Pete. I thought that was really funny. Pete was great. He's like, I got
those Pete, by the way,
long commute. Yeah. It was really great. So loved it all. I really encourage everyone to watch that video because I thought it was super educational.
Thanks. And you know, Pete does have a Model 3. He's driven a Model 3 for years, but he's never interacted with CCS. So he really didn't know like some of the things that he was asking them. And, you know, I think he did a good job also of being the secret shopper. So check out that video if you haven't seen it. And Don, before we jump on, I know we got a list of things to talk about with you guys with some cool collab between you two. I have a video going probably today so many of my followers still ask the question about the snowstorm thing. What happens when you get stuck in a snowstorm? The EVs, the batteries won't last. You'll be dead. Now, a lot of other people have done videos. Actually, Alex Dykes on Alex on Audio did a good video on this where he really explained why, you know, it's kind of comparable how long a battery will last to how long a full tank of gas would last and so forth. And, you know, he did all the calculations. So I didn't need to really go through the energy use and everything. But what I did do was when it's finally snowed here in New Jersey, we got like 4 inches of snow. I'd never gone through an entire winter where we never had snow. So what I did was I charged the R1T and the Lightning up to 85%, parked them in my yard before the snowstorm. And for 12 hours, I left the heaters running to maintain an interior temperature of about 55 degrees. So, and I wanted to see how much each vehicle would drain down. Now the Rivian also has the vampire drain going on at times. So, you know, and the Lightning doesn't. So that was a factor, a little bit of a factor, but the fact of the matter is when you're stuck in your truck or your EV on the side of the road, you don't care what's draining the battery. You just want to know how long the damn thing will last. So I did a video with that for 12 hours and then I analyzed the results. That's coming out later today. And it's interesting. The Lightning did better than the Rivian. I don't think that would surprise anybody. It was actually much more efficient than the Rivian and would last a lot longer if you needed to, survive parked stranded somewhere until emergency services got to you. So look for that video. And then I have another video coming out later this week. If you take a look behind me, there's a bunch of chargers on the wall here and they're not, it's not random. I'm putting out my best of 2023 for high powered 48 amp home chargers. So that video is coming out. That'll be coming out later this week.
Sweet. Let us know about that one on online too, because that'll be a good one to promote. Everyone needs to see that, I think.
Yeah, and that'll be on Inside EVs also for sure. You know, we'll put that up on Inside EVs probably mid next week. I'm just polishing up the results of that video.
Sweet. All right. Did you have anything else? No, that was it.
Pretty much it. I'll be starting another free giveaway of a charger. I've given away 3 chargers the last 3 months on Twitter, and I'm going to be giving another one. I'm going to launch it this week, another 40 amp Grizzly. And then next month, I've already committed to a 48 amp Emporia to give away. So I've got, we're holding on with one charger a month. I've been giving away. It seems like it's working well. Followers love it. And, hey, you know, if I could if I could give away chargers, if the companies are willing to sponsor me to do this, I'll just keep giving them away.
So you go to,
it's on my Twitter account, and I'll post the,
at Tomalog, right?
Yeah. At Tomalog. And I'll post that I'm giving it away. And then I kind of change the rules each time, but it's basically you retweet my post and you follow me on, or you subscribe to State of Charge and you're entered. And the more times you retweet it, the more I see your name and the better chance you'll have of winning the charger.
And which charger was this again?
So it's going to be a Grizzly 40 amp Grizzly from United Chargers.
Nice.
Not the Grizzly Smart, just the regular,
sure,
quote unquote dumb charger, but they're solid units. They're really good units, and they last a long time. They're great to use outdoors, and you know, it's they make some good charging equipment there.
Yeah, I've heard good things about them. So, so Kyle, as usual, you've had a pretty busy EV filled week, and you've published several different vehicle driving reviews. But I wanted to start off with your news about your Model S Plaid Yoke. So I understand that Tesla is now offering round replacement wheels. Like, go crazy with it, and your yoke's days are numbered. So yeah, what's up with that? What's going on?
Well, originally, before Tesla offered a round steering wheel upgrade, we started the process of speccing all the parts to put a Model 3 steering wheel on our Plaid with stocks. And I've done a full video review of this setup with my friend Ryan Huber's car and drove his Plaid around California with a round wheel and actual stocks. And it was perfect. It really transformed the car. You know, the yoke I actually have gotten used to, but the thing that I don't enjoy it is it's not a performance issue, really. It's like if I'm sliding the car around, yes, the yoke's a little bit weird. What I don't like is I can't easily shuffle the wheel through my hand. So if I just want to do a quick slide out of my neighborhood or a quick slide somewhere, I can't really confidently know where to grab the wheel. And to me, that just limits the amount of fun that I can have with the Model S. So putting a round wheel on there should be nice. I can feel the wheel run through my hands when I'm doing FSD beta testing, for example. I can actually keep my hands closer to the wheel rather than have this rectangle spin around and crash into me. And so I think overall, for me, I understand some people like the yoke. My dad likes the yoke. It improves nothing. It only takes away some of the feel for me. So that's why I've chosen to put a round wheel on. So just as we were finishing up the Model 3 kit for the Model S, we Tesla announced they're going to make a yoke replacement. Right. And so I ordered it. I was like the first one to get it, you know, put my name on the list from Tesla. And then, you know, just yesterday I was just checking my email and boom, a minute earlier, it said, time to schedule your appointment. You're ready for this thing. So I went through, scheduled it through the app, round steering wheel, $750, by the way, which is kind of crazy that I need to pay that much for a round wheel. Right. So anyway, I thought I would rather go with the Tesla upgrade because it benefits our users more. It's something that they'll actually do more than this weird Model 3 adaptation. Plus, I'm going to try out the new Model S wheel. And I just saw one 2 days ago for the first time at a supercharger. It was a Model X engineering vehicle right near the Gigafactory here in Austin. And it had the round wheel. And I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. So anyway, it goes in at the end of the month and it'll get its round wheel.
Right on. All right. So last week, we talked about the Ford Mustang Mach-E GT. This week, you have a review up of the Kia EV6 GT. So not the GT line trim level, but the actual spicy version of the EV6 with like 570 horsepower. And I have to say, the opening sequence, that video, chef's kiss. Nice slide to the dirt, onto the pavement, all properly oriented to like then rock it up the road, which you also do. And it's like the perfect like slide and take off. Yeah. So watching this, I was surprised to hear about all the upgrades that the GT got. I don't know why it didn't really click with me before, but adaptive suspension, bigger brakes, of course, but also an upgraded brake booster you talk about. There's a rear chassis brace under the floor over the subwoofer, and then a five-link suspension up front.
It has a completely redesigned front-end geometry compared to the normal EV6.
Right, that's kind of crazy. So all that kind of sells the car to me, but does it like live up to the hardware? So I understand it's not necessarily straightforward to get all the performance out of it.
Yeah, well, and I also think part of it's because it was cold out when we were testing. In the summertime, you could probably access more of the performance more of the time. But with most electric vehicles, well, I guess I'll back up for a second. The EV6 GT uses the same battery pack as the standard car, 77.4 kilowatt hours, roughly usable. That is a pretty small battery pack to pull 570 horsepower out of. And, you know, that's a pretty big, you know, charge and discharge rate when you're ripping on it.
Right.
The Mustang Mach-E, for example, GT, we also had at the same time, had some limitations, but kind of nothing like the EV6 GT did. This thing, if it was below 50% and the battery wasn't super toasty, it just would not perform at all. So what we did in preparation for this test was arrive to a DC fast charger, actually pretty cold on the battery pack, charge it to 100%, which by that point we drove it gently to the base of the mountain roads to then start shredding. So it was one of those things we really had to get right. And then the car was just insanely good. I mean, truly, truly fantastic. To the point where when Ioniq 5 N comes out, I think I'm going to buy one because it is one of the few cars that I didn't want to stop driving. And it was a wonderful experience. So I guess I'll break that down for you very quickly, but I have a full, you know, 40, 50 minute long video on this topic. The front end is way more planted than the standard car. The ELSD on the rear axle, limited slip diff, is perfectly tuned. So as soon as you start coming out of a corner and you apply throttle, it'll actually start to lock up a little bit more and you come out of corners with straight wheel. So you're just always driving in a bit of slip angle on this thing. And it's super tail happy and like pretty awesome. Right. So when the faster you drive it, the better it gets. And the brakes are fantastic. Everything about it was truly great. The downside to this car, I thought, was kind of all of the daily driving stuff. I really didn't like it driving around town. If you're trying to get around town quickly, the front motor actually was almost too powerful where it would overwhelm the whole car. A bit of GV60 performance. You would just come out of a corner if you're making a right on a turn, it would just roast the tires for miles. And, you know, the rear axle is just along for the fun. As soon as you can start using the weight of the car and really sending it around, that's when, you know, the thing really comes alive. So we also did a range test on this car. In addition, Max did that. And, you know, surprisingly, it actually beat its EPA range rating in our highway test, which is unlike the Koreans. It's the first time we've seen that from them. So I want to say it did 213, 217 miles, just under 220, somewhere around there. And, you know, I thought, okay, it's really not efficient around town, at least in my driving. I was getting like low 1 point something miles per kilowatt hours. And that was just driving normally, like with heater on. It was cold. But on the highway, I you know, it's got 200 miles of usable range if you full charge it. So it's not going to be the ultimate road tripper. It does charge great. I wouldn't get the GT if you're going to do long distance driving.
Right.
But for
it
me,
it looks like it works pretty good though, man.
Living in Colorado, dude, I don't know if there's a faster way to get through the mountains than this car because it's pretty incredible. I mean, I actually preferred driving it more than the Model 3 Performance, which is the first EV that I've preferred driving on a twisty road more than Model 3 Performance.
Really?
Yeah, at least out of the box. The Model 3 Performance needs some serious upgrades to get more hardcore as they've sort of softened that car over the years. This is coming in and it's like the Koreans went hardcore. It's pretty amazing.
Right. Wow. You got Alyssa holding on tight through that.
Yeah, crazy. She enjoys it though. And, you know, and she was the reason she was there. She really wanted to go for this mountain road blast. So I was like, you know what, if you like performance driving, and she'd been on many cars on this stretch of road. And so, yep, she really enjoyed it. And she preferred the car as well. She liked it.
Sweet. So as you're saying, like the range on this thing is not so good, but Max got 217 miles out of it. So I thought it was pretty good.
Well, so that's not that good, but it's better than.
But it's only rated for 209, right?
Right, which still is really bad.
Right, because that's like a 77 kilowatt hour battery.
77, and like if you look at a non-GT, they're rated for mid-200s. I think almost 265 miles if you go for a, you know, a standard one with a big battery. So that's a huge hit to go when you go for the GT.
I wonder if it's got the inverters are like upgraded to the material.
Different motors, different inverters, different cooling strategy for the motors. They use direct cooling right into the rotor situation. It's pretty amazing what they're doing, actually. And the thermal longevity of this system was amazing. I mean, we were pounding and pounding and pounding on this car, and it never gave up. Unlike, and I hate to use the comparison all the time, but the day before I did the Mustang Mach-E GT, which is a direct competitor to this car.
Right.
The Mach-E GT has a much larger battery pack, and it had thermal limit or a power limit within 5 seconds of me starting, legitimately, probably less than 5 seconds. And the whole way up the hill, the Mach-E was just, you know, in a so-called turtle mode. It was just limiting the whole way. When the EV6 GT is coming in with, yeah, slightly less range, you'll be surprised, not that much less range. We did a range test on the Mach-E as well. And the powertrain just smoked the whole way, just ripped for almost an hour. It's crazy.
Right. Was it Leonard asks, I wonder if it can charge faster on a 400 volt charger due to the upgraded inverters.
That would be interesting to test. Perhaps if the rear motor can do more than 100 kilowatts, that rear motor inverter.
So let's see. You also had a review of an older vehicle on your channel this week, a used Tesla Model 3 rear wheel drive with 45,000 miles on it. It sounds like a lot like my car.
Yeah, some weird guy owned it in Florida.
That's because I guess it was my car. So you were actually coming through Tallahassee last Saturday and stopped in long enough to make a couple videos, including a driving review of my car. So let me pull that up here for us.
Wait, that was you driving with Dominic, Kyle? I thought that was the guy from Independence Day, the scientist. I didn't know that was you, Dom. Sorry. I noticed somebody put that in the comment section, I had to mention it.
So yeah, so Kyle dropped in and we met up at a Starbucks, go figure. And this is my car's 0.0. And so what do you think overall, Kyle?
Well, I think, you and I had spoken about this car from the beginning. We found it together and, you know, I've sort of followed the purchase process from your side. And so it was cool to see the car and to know exactly what you got because, you know, up to this point, I had never seen this particular one. And I would say from a build standpoint, from a quality of materials, from a squeaks and rattles, you got a really good one. And this particular generation of when your car was made was probably the last of when they were truly solid up until they went through a dark period for a couple of years. And now they're coming back with incredible quality. And so this was just at the beginning of the major ramp up of production, still probably when there were a lot of eyes and hands on these vehicles. It was still an early one to make sure quality was good. And it truly is. The long range rear wheel drive, I think, is the sweet spot for Model 3. You get, 250 kilowatt charging. You get, fairly good efficiency, especially if you run the aero wheels. And overall, I think you made the right choice going for this over a Bolt by far. Now, it's not all perfect for you. You do have an onboard charger. It's a temperature limit out of reality. What is it? The PCS board issue?
Right, the PCS issue, that's definitely. Yeah, so I can only charge at I think 16 amps instead of 48 amps or 40 amps.
Right. But your DC fast charging is not affected. So what I would do is just charge at 16 amps until it actually explodes, and then DC fast charge it till you're ready to replace it, because it's not cheap to fix that issue.
It could be up to $2,000, I think, according to something I've read online. There's a few articles, because this is a common issue, I guess, for 2018 Model 3. So if you're buying a 2018 Model 3, you might want to check to make sure there's not a little message, error message.
Right, when you bought the car, the message was there.
Right. But there's two messages. You didn't notice it. Right. There was two messages. There was one about the ownership transfer or something. And then, but that would go away. And then this other one would show up. But I didn't notice the second one showing up, which would have, I don't know what could have really done anything about it. I wouldn't really understood anyway. Exactly.
Right.
I
just would have assumed because charging power.
Right. Could be the voltage at the shop. Who knows? Right.
Right.
Yeah. But there's no warranty with the car. And so I'm pretty much on my own. So you said there's an outfit that does aftermarket work on Teslas called the Electrified Garage. And there's a location in Ocala close to me, a couple hundred miles from me. So I need to call there and just kind of get an idea if they do that and how much they charge. There is a potential also maybe doing it myself. I think this is probably a very bad idea. But anyway, it's a possibility. I guess you don't have to drop the battery. I think you can access it take out the back seat. I think there's an access panel there possibly to the penthouse of the battery. That's a little structure that sits on top of the actual battery enclosure. We call it the penthouse. And that's where the PCS lives. And you can find all kinds of videos of people, pointing out, looking at the PCS and showing them what it does. It's got three blocks of different things that handle, I think, 16 amps of current each one. So some cars, it starts to go and it'll only get 30 amps. And then when you lose two blocks, it's 16 amps. So that's kind of where I'm at. But
right. Overall, the car felt great. It was great to see you. And we also filmed some other videos, which maybe we'll get to in a little bit. We filmed one other video. Yeah, great.
But before we get to that, I wanted to. So you're still in Austin, Texas this week. So that now has a lot of automotive content to go with the music and everything else. So one of the electric things you saw there that you've uploaded a video about, at least, is the Porsche GT4 e-Performance, which I believe began life as a 718 Club Sport. So this isn't a street legal car. It's really engineered for the track, but I was hoping you could tell us a bit, because it was kind of interesting actually, about Porsche's strategy for keeping like full power flowing for a 30-minute session. So maybe just tell us what these cars are about and about this strategy here.
Yeah, so I got to spend a little bit of time with the 718 GT4 e-Performance, and it wasn't anything special. I just saw the car parked outside of the convention center and filmed a video on it. No one was there from Porsche, so I just read the specs online and made this video. But it was my first time seeing this car in person, which I'm really excited about because, first of all, I love the 718. I think it's the right size car. They also make a spicy one called the GT4. They make a GT4 RS, which is the crazy thing with induction piping right by your ears. And I've been able to experience that car on track, and it is truly amazing. And then they make a Club Sport version, which is all about hardcore weekend racers, hill climbs. You own the car, you get a trailer, you build a little team, and you can go to different events where you can take the car out and enjoy it. It's not like a full race team in a, Le Mans setting or IMSA setting or something like this. Right. This is weekend racers having fun. A lot of team owners do this on the side, things like that. So Porsche basically sells factory race cars that you can go to a dealership and buy, and they just deliver it to you like a normal car, not street legal, of course, but they're one of the very few brands who offer a club racer, if you will, from the factory. And it's pretty incredible that they're able to do that. They decided to make that concept electric, which really gets me excited because it is kind of the perfect application for EV. You don't really have to worry about long distance range. Most of the events are about 30 minutes for each session. And the big challenges that this is what's the smallest battery for lightweight that you can put in to run a 30-minute session? How do you get the most amount of regen during that session to maximize that low capacity? And how do you charge it really fast? Because in between sessions, you need to get, juice in this thing, assuming tracks have high power charging, which Atlanta Motorsports Park just got a whole bunch of DC fast chargers. I believe Lime Rock is getting some. The tracks are now getting chargers, which is great.
Nice.
And so basically this is a 900 volt system architecture, has an 80 kilowatt hour battery pack with 65 kilowatt hour usable. So it's a huge buffer, which makes sense because if you're going wide open throttle all the time, you don't want that much loss of performance. So I imagine most of that buffer is on the bottom.
That's right.
And there's two permanent magnet motors, 400 kilowatts each. So what's that? 1,070 horsepower. So it makes more power than a Plaid in something that small, which is crazy. And
Man, that's a crazy freaking car to run.
It's got to be insane because I think about how quick my Plaid is, and I'm like, it weighs 2,000 pounds more and is twice the size. So, like, this just must be a monster. And it can do 800 kilowatts of regen, which is twice what a Hummer EV can do. And a Hummer EV at 400 kilowatts regen is like into ABS almost. It's like standing on the nose. So, you know, this is like, you may never even use friction brakes, or at least not much. And the fact that it can charge at 350 kilowatts on such a small battery pack and charge from 5 to 80% in 15 minutes is pretty incredible. So the 30-minute runtime can't happen at 1,000 horsepower. They dial it down to about 650. And so that's where you can get sustained performance. They have, you know, oil cooling for the battery pack and motors that touch everything. Massive cooling system here. And I hope one day I'm able to experience it and try it out and get it hot and plug it in and do all that cool stuff, because as a technology showcase, this is pretty incredible. It's important to remember that this particular one works and it has all of that in there. It's not on sale yet, but my gut feeling is it will go on sale, and we're going to see electric versus combustion, you know, club racers out on the weekends at the same time, which is going to be awesome.
Well, that would be great. I don't know. Do you think so? The regular club racer is. Do you think it would be? It'll be able to hang with this.
I think they're going to probably dial in the settings so that the cars themselves will become pretty much the same, and it's up to the driver, or it's up to your vehicle choice. Maybe the combustion will have some benefits. The electric might have some benefits. Maybe they'll have an electric series separate from the combustion one. But I'd love to get them both together on the same track.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So as I mentioned before, you were, let me just turn that off. You were in Tallahassee and did a review of my car, but then you also rode with Kay and I. Kay's my musical partner. She plays bass in Firefly Rebellion and camera person for this ride. So we tried out FSD beta for the very first time, and I'd actually activated a day or two before, so it was pretty much ready to go. And I have to say, it worked kind of as I expected. Let me just pull up the footage of us here. Share screen.
And it's important to note, this was not the new full stack 11.3. This was previous software.
This is the 10. Well, you read it out in the thing, but it's the version before. The 11.3 they're up to now? Yeah. So we got the three camera view going on. It's pretty good. So I have to say, yeah, it worked kind of like I expected. I've seen my fair share of videos from other people, and I've seen it do pretty amazing things, but I've also seen some really bad, dumb things. So in our first drive, it didn't obviously kill us, and it performed some things quite well. In a number of situations, usually when it involved getting close to other cars, like weren't traveling in our same direction, it kind of fell on its face, becoming super hesitant. And sometimes it just like stopped, like in a non-ideal situation, or slowed down abruptly where it shouldn't. It's kind of odd. So I'm going to make a dude loop, as Kyle suggested I do. My channel is called Drive Electric with Dominic. The acronym is DUDE. Right. So I'm going to make a dude loop and record the progress of the FSD system over time. So I don't know if anyone has any questions for me or not.
Well, I think that'll be good to see a loop. I mean, try and make it difficult and try and run it at, you know, same type of time of day during, you know, peak traffic or something like that. I think peak traffic is the most interesting because that's about how it operates with other cars around it. And, you know, if there's no one else on the road, in my experience, it always does a pretty good job of getting you there. But it's how it interacts with other cars. And we've done a couple videos now where we've had cars following a car on FSD beta and got the outside view. And that's where you're like, oh my God, this looks so weird going down the road. Like, you're definitely going to get pulled over. So I'm really looking forward to trying the new software. Everyone keeps asking if we'll run it in the Hogback. We will. So that's going to happen as soon as my car gets the update.
And Dob, make sure part of that loop goes through that sketchy neighborhood where you guys drove, because I guarantee if you drive there enough,
you'll catch something going on the side of the road that will make your video just go viral. Like something's going to happen there. It's going to be like a fight outside a bar or something. And the guy's pants will fall down on his knees and something hilarious. So make sure it goes through that sketchy neighborhood.
So I need to get some, my USB in there. So I get, I can back up my camera, my sensory camera.
Set up a camera that's always shooting outside. Also, even if you don't use it, you could just use it on the times where it catches something really wild, because if you watch this video, Kyle points out, he's like, you can tell we're in a bad area when there's a bar in every corner. You're going to get something really interesting if you keep driving around there. So
right.
That's my two cents.
Right. So far I was thinking of, so we have like a Florida State University is in Tallahassee, and they've really, there's one street close to the university that's really become student centric. So there's a lot of foot traffic. It looks a little slow and it kind of winds its way to, and there's a traffic circle. Then it goes towards the FSU stadium where they play football. So that, I think that's an interesting part to kind of include in the loop. So I'm thinking about it, and and we'll come up with something. And so tomorrow I'm going to have a video. I'm going to have to try to have a video tomorrow of my first service visit. With a mobile technician that came to my house and did a rear harness recall repair, which was kind of neat. And I enjoyed it. Oh, I enjoyed it more than probably the mobile tech did, because I was pestering him with questions and stuff.
Did you ask him about the charging issue you have also while he was there?
I did. And he looked it up on the, the diagnostic screen. So there's two layers of diagnostic screens. So the deepest layer that he connected his laptop to, and it could tell him about the code. So he saw there was the PCS issue, and it had a code about temperature sensitivity that, we don't get in the car usually. And then he, on his laptop, he could see the recommendation is like replace the PCS. Right. Cause at first he wasn't sure that was really the problem. If it really needed to be done like that.
So my follow-up question would have been, you think you can come on the weekend and just do this for cash for me and we won't tell anybody? I'm sure they lose parts in their mobile service van every now and then. I mean, Dom, come on. You got to try to make things work.
I'm not from New Jersey. I don't know how all that works, man.
I would have been like, look, buddy, I'll turn the heat on for you. You got a heated garage. I'll make you lunch. I'll pay you cash. See if one of those onboard chargers kind of falls off the truck one of these days. You come over here and no one's going to know any different.
Right. Right. So that's my big news. And I have another video planned for this weekend that we can talk about in a minute, actually, because we have a topic coming up that could be some crossover stuff. But we should talk about some news of the week real quick.
I just want to bring up one point. Did we ever talk about Blue Cruise 1.2 last week?
Your Hogback Challenge?
Yeah, because I think the video went up after the podcast.
It did. I think we talked about it a little bit, but we can talk about it now.
No, as long as we did, I just couldn't remember. But it is a major update for those who don't know. Blue Cruise 1.2 rocks. It's now I was really trying to think about it. Is it my new favorite driver assistance system? It's at least up there for top one or two.
Right, with Tesla, basically.
Yeah, Tesla's good, but the phantom braking is driving me nuts. I prefer it over autopilot at the moment until Tesla can fix the major phantom brakes. I think it's like there must be something going on with my specific Model S, and I've put up some videos about it, but that thing just puts on the anchors and goes full brakes. It's crazy. But Blue Cruise performed so great in the Hogback. Really smooth lane changes, really good, natural feeling of the way that it drives, and can't wait for everyone to get their updates to their existing cars, because you're truly going to love it.
Kyle, you were impressed with the previous version anyway, right? Well, it was one of your, if I recall correctly, you thought they did a really good job. It just, it's that much better now, or am I misremembering? Nope.
You're misremembering. I kind of didn't like it before. And I almost didn't even use it before, because it just does this every time you go anywhere. Have it in your Lightning, right?
Yeah. And it's pretty steady unless it's windy. If it's windy, it ping pongs a lot. But it's other than that, I'm happy with it as is. I can't wait to 1.2. I mean, I use it all the time. And yeah. The ping ponging is annoying.
It was just kind of a mess system. Like I wouldn't, you know, the old Blue Cruise wasn't like bad, but it could not handle many situations. I didn't like the way that all the graphics and user communication would work. It just seems like so many things have been updated for 1.2 where it's there. I mean, there's still room for improvement. We point all that out in the video. I think there's a lot more safety components Ford should add in, especially if you're not paying attention, things like that. We actually awarded it no points there. But the actual user, you know, kind of feedback in 1.2 is awesome. Mach-E Vlog also has 1.2 on a test vehicle this week. So keep an eye on their channel for updates. I'm going to go watch some of their stuff today because I'm curious to see what they think. But I was really, honestly, truly blown away with the system. Very few systems get updates that are presented as so small, but are so huge to the user.
Improvement, yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty amazing.
When do you think Tom can get this on his truck?
Well, I don't know for Lightning, and I don't expect anytime soon.
Yeah, that might be following up a little bit, but I will say Ford has emailed me like last week saying, when can we get you a car with the Mach-E with 1.2? And I haven't even responded yet. I've just been backed up with stuff. Yeah,
I have soon. This truck. I could loan you.
Yeah, just make them update your truck.
Yeah,
that would be cool. But as you said, Kyle, it's probably not ready for that vehicle yet, and I don't think they would give it to me unless it was solid. Because I'm going to show what it's doing, and if it's not working well, that wouldn't be a smart decision on them to give it to me. But I'm sure when it is available for Lightning, they'll probably push it out to me pretty early.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would imagine so.
Right on. All right. So I want to talk about some news. I'm kind of missing Martin here today. He had a family emergency, so he can't be with us. He should be with us next week, we're hoping. So I guess the big product news of the week, literally, is the design debut of the production version of the Kia EV9. So it's going to have its full debut at the upcoming New York Auto Show, but we don't have all the tech specs yet. It's on the EGMP platform, so you know it could have a lot of similarities. It's most likely going to have a lot of similarities with the other EGMP platform products from Hyundai Motor Group, the Kia EV6, IONIQ 5, GV60 Genesis. This is a true three-row vehicle with seats big enough to accommodate full-grown adults, at least for shorter rides. And I can pull that up here too, I guess, if I knew what I was doing. So this is why we miss Martin, for other reasons too, but especially for getting all this video work properly shown. So that's the GV60 on the screen there, showing that. And it's going to slide over to the EV9, which it looks, you know, it's a lot like the concept, basically. So I was saying it's a true three-row vehicle, and it's got the seats can accommodate full-grown adults, at least for shorter rides. So we have a walk-around video on our post here that you can see now on Inside EVs. And the vehicle that Kia's allowed us to see was a six-seat configuration. So the second row seats have this cool party trick. They're like captain chairs that can be spun around to face the rear seats. So I don't, Tom, what do you think of the EV9 so far? And I don't know if you've seen it, but do you think the rotating second row is like a practical selling point?
So the thing, I did not see the rotating second row, to be honest with you. I've been traveling this whole week. I just got in like 4 o'clock in the morning last night, as a matter of fact. I quickly watched the video and I love how this thing looks. I mean, it has me wondering if I should cancel my R1S order. Oh. You know, I definitely want to check this out because I mean, this, I think they nailed it with the styling. This is a good looking vehicle.
Right. It's large. We're looking at the interior a bit right now. I wanted to get to the second row though, because that's kind of like the neat, you know, there's like two captain's chairs like this. And he should show them spun around at some point, but I'm not seeing it here. Maybe I should go to the in the post. Actually, here we go. Scroll down to the.
Yeah, there it is.
Here we go. Right. So I don't know. Kyle, what do you think? Would you want to be sitting driving backwards? Is that, is, I don't know. Is, maybe it's a cultural thing. I mean, we did this when we were kids, like us old timers, yeah. When we were kids in the back of station wagons. You know, we had used to be often a set of rear facing seats in the back of station wagons for kids. But, you know, and the kids would also get sick, car sick in the back.
Yeah, I don't see why not. Seems cool. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, you could just put them straight if you don't like going backwards. Like, at least you have option. So, like, that's cool. I think overall, styling nailed it. We know the charging performance is going to be good and probably better than IONIQ 5 EV6 GV60 because they're going to have to put a bigger battery pack in this thing. The 77 kilowatt hour pack is going to have to become the standard range version, and then there has to be a long range that's 100 kilowatt hours, I hope. Do you know if they've released any of the tech specs on it yet?
Yeah, no tech specs.
Okay.
I expect,
it needs 100 kilowatt hours usable.
Yes.
I think, you know, at minimum, because this is now a family SUV. You're going to go take it and do stuff with it, and it has to be no compromise. They need a cheaper one for low end entry level price, and they could charge 80, 85, well, maybe 79,999 or whatever it is to get whatever tax credit. We know they produce a lot of their SUVs in the US. So it's very possible this will be produced in America. I don't know if that's been released or not.
I kind of think it is, actually.
Okay, great. So that's good. So tax credit friendly here. And we don't know enough, but I will say, to Tom's point of canceling R1S and going for this, Colton, who does our detailing channel, lost his mind over this thing. And he's like, we are 100% getting this over R1S now.
Wow.
And really? I'm like, well, we don't know the tech specs yet, but he's like, we know it's going to charge so much better. And it's already got all the really sorted good tech that EGMP stuff has. So yeah, I think it could be good. You know, there's a lot of electric SUV three rows coming on the market now. Volvo EX90 comes to mind as, you know, sort of right up there. If Kia can win on the tech, and we know Volvo's tech isn't going to be super class leading. It's 400 volt system architecture, 250 kilowatt peak charging, but most chargers in the US will not be able to charge that car at 250 kilowatts. Most will do about 200, 205. If this can come in and get 300 kilowatt charging and have all the great driver assistance stuff and everything that Kia is known to have, they could freaking own this market. So we'll see. They did it with Palisade and Telluride. They might be doing it again here.
If they can build enough of them, that's the thing, because they've got some great product up there, but they don't have the volume of production, I feel like, to keep up with the demand, right?
Well, anytime you have a hot car, you get a big wave, and then, you know, you got to project this out for many years. So we know the first year when this comes out, it's going to be hard to get one. After that, it shouldn't be that bad, especially with the economy going down over the next few years. You know, potentially, I don't know, I'm not in, you know, that's not my expertise, but if the economy stays in this frantic state, then, you know, I don't expect there to be huge demand like there would have been, you know, a year and a half ago.
Right. I think Volvo can hold its own against this just because of maybe more of a premium experience on the inside and just, totally. You know, also Volvo brand faithful.
Yeah, and I think it's different classes of vehicle, but you know, you're going to go for, do you want Swedish style and luxury, if you will, or do you want Korean tech? Unfortunately, you can't put them all into one, because that would be the ultimate collaboration, is to have Kia and Volvo get together and build that.
I thought the Kia materials on the interior were pretty decent. You know, I'm not sure quite premium, like up to Volvo level, but. For a lot of people, though, it'll be good enough, I think, if the price is a...
Every time you drive one of these Korean cars, though, it's like someone described luxury to them, and then they, you know, produced that. They didn't really experience it. And I get it more as I go into the Genesis lineup, and I'm like, I just experienced the new G90, which is their maximum luxury sedan. You get out of that, and then you get into an S-Class, and you still go, oh, yeah, the Germans still got it. So, yeah, they still got some work to do.
Sure.
They have been moving upscale, you know, Hyundai.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the materials, their choice of materials has been getting better and better gradually. And prices have crept up also. I mean, look at what, you know, would you have thought that, you know, you're going to have a Kia that costs $80,000 or $90,000 a few years ago? You know, it's
right.
That was the value brand. You know, that was, yes. You know, if you had $25,000, you'd get a Kia. And now they're competing with luxury brands. So they have to improve the materials they use in the interior and stuff. But, you know, we've criticized Cadillac with the Lyric on the interior materials also, that, you know, it doesn't seem to have the fit and finish and the choice of materials that you would expect in a Cadillac. So, you know, everybody's trying to save where they can.
It's true. To my point about just being available, we have a story on Inside EVs this week about Genesis is expanding from, I think, three states or four states to 15 states. So if you're only selling cars in 15 states, you know, your volumes are going to be, you know, lower than what they would be if they're, you know, in the entire, we have 50 states, right? So they're going to all of the electric models now on sale for the first time in Texas, Wisconsin, joining Arizona, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Louisiana, a bunch of states. You can look that up online. Right. But yeah, pretty psyched about this. That's going to be a big deal at the New York Auto Show. But yes.
I think they're only adding two states, Dom. I think they were available in 13
states,
and now they're available in 15. Right. So it's not like they really went out there and you know, just, you know, it was one of the big criticisms that I had. You know, when I see these limited rollouts in a few of the original CARB states, it's like, you know, it smacks of compliance cars. I know they don't really need them anymore, but, you know, coming from following the industry so long, that's how the automakers used to do it. Just build enough cars to meet compliance and sell them in a couple of states. And it's a shame they build these really nice cars and don't make them available to everyone, you know. And even the original rollout of some of the vehicles, it was weird. Like they had all the typical CARB states, California, New Jersey, Massachusetts, but then there was also Utah and Louisiana. And it was like, how did they pick those two states to add to the CARB states to sell their vehicles? I wouldn't think Genesis would be a big, you know, Louisiana. I wouldn't expect Genesis to be a hotbed there, but
right.
You know, they've got to make them available everywhere. Every manufacturer should make them available everywhere. If they're in limited supply, okay, they're in limited supply. You know, instead of every state getting, you know, 100 of them this year, whoever orders them first gets them. But I hate this when they just give them to a few states and, you know, block out customers in 3/4 of the country.
Right. So let's move along, I think, to the next item. We have the next biggest product news this week involves a much smaller car and one that we probably won't get here, but it's still a pretty big deal. Volkswagen debuted its the ID 2-All concept, and we'll throw that up on the screen as well. And you can see that. Maybe. Oh, that's a whole presentation video.
I would just scroll down to the photos.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on there. Throw that up. Okay. So Volkswagen has debuted the ID 2 All concept, which they are pitching as a new people's car because its big selling point is a more affordable price. The production version of this ID 2 will start at under 200 or 25,000 euros, which is about 26,600 US dollars today. The ID 2 All is the first vehicle from Volkswagen to sit on the smaller MEB entry platform. So this is the first front-wheel drive MEB car. So this is a concept, but it looks very close to, I think, to what we should see that come to production. It's got four doors. It's about 9 inches shorter overall than the Volkswagen Golf. But it's got the wheels are pushed to the corner, so the wheelbase is actually less than an inch shorter than the Golf's. And because of the drivetrain, they say it actually has more interior space than the Golf. So that's pretty interesting. Has a 166 kilowatt motor. That's 220 horsepower, so that it can shoot to 60 miles an hour in less than 7 seconds. So not quite Golf GTI performance in a straight line, but quick enough, I think, to be fun. Targeted range is 280 miles on the WLTP cycle, which is not huge, but still not bad, I think. It'll be, I look at that and I think, what, 250 miles probably? And it can be charged from 10 to 80% in 20 minutes. And we can add Kyle back. Welcome back, Kyle.
Thank you. I don't know what happened there.
I don't know either. So Tom, I was just saying, so you just missed this part, but so it's got 280 miles of WLTP range, which I translate in my head as 250 miles EPA, maybe.
Probably less than that.
Okay, probably a little less than that. It can be charged from 10 to 80% in 20 minutes, which
pretty
is
good.
Pretty good, right? So Tom, how big a deal is this car, do you think, especially in light of the fact that Volkswagen also has an even smaller car coming out for under 21,000 euros?
It's getting affordable electric range, electric cars that have decent range over 250 miles, say, is paramount for the whole industry to move. You know, we can keep talking about $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 SUVs that, you know, 5% of the population can afford all day long, and that doesn't move the needle. These kind of cars move the needle. But you know, I mean, we already have one. We have a Bolt. So it's not like it's not like, you know, the people's car. Oh my God, Volkswagen finally, you know, made a vehicle. That's that how'd they do it? You know, it's basically the same price as a Bolt EV, and the Bolt EV looks like it's probably bigger than this. The one thing that the Bolt EV looks like doesn't do that this can do is charge quickly on the road. But for vast majority of Americans, I think that, you know, that doesn't matter, that can charge at home. It really doesn't matter if it can charge at 50 kilowatts or 250 kilowatts for a lot of people, because they just don't exceed 250 miles of driving in a normal day. So I love it. I think it's great. Every manufacturer should be selling a $25,000 electric car that can go 250 miles. And it's good to see that this is again, but it's not, you know, I think I got the impression from some of the articles and stuff that I read that, oh my God, look what Volkswagen's doing. They're reinventing the wheel. They made the people's car, you know, that which right. is what Volkswagen stands for with the, they came out with the Beetle, and you know, it was like an affordable car for everyone. And right. look, they're doing it again. It was like, well, wait a minute. Chevy's been doing this for 4 years now.
Right.
So, you know, cool. I love it. It looks really cool. I probably would even choose one of these over Bolt if I had the opportunity, if they were, you know, next to each other, if they were both available today. I like the styling of it. I like even the size. That would be a really cool daily for me. But, you know, all right. This is what we should already have these from everybody. So good on Volkswagen for bringing it out. Where's Ford's $25,000 little runaround? Where's, you know, the Kia and Hyundai's and all the other, say, value brands? You know, where's their sub $30,000 EVs? GM's coming out. They say the Equinox is going to be a $30,000 vehicle that's much bigger than this. So to me, the Equinox would be even a more important vehicle than what Volkswagen's doing with this little runaround for basically, you know, only a little bit less than what GM's going to be bringing out with the Equinox.
Right.
Sorry to throw cold water on it. I think it's great. My reaction is kind of to the reaction of some of the articles that I read. It was almost like, finally, we're going to have an affordable electric car that can go far. But we already have one. So.
Right. I thought we had a link to, so that we have a picture of a product from Cupra that may be also on the similar size to the 21,000 euro car, because I want to bring that up too. But I'm with you, Tom. I think I might like this over a Bolt myself, just because it's smaller, but it's, you know, charges so much faster. Let me just turn that off. Yeah, smaller. So I had the Spark EV, which is kind of small, which is maybe more in this kind of size neighborhood. And I think that's a lot more fun. It was a lot more fun to drive than the Chevy Bolt, which is just bigger. And the Bolt is even quicker, but just the way the feel of the Spark was great, the steering feel and just the smallness of it. It was just a blast to drive. And this Volkswagen looks like it might be as well. Yeah.
Kyle, I like it. You know, it's a concept, so I have to hate it, but like the idea of it. A small Volkswagen hatch that's electric that you can get pretty cheap and bang into curbs and use it as a city car in Europe. That's the thing. For US audience, I agree. We already have the Bolt, but this I think is going to be a whole nother level. It's going to charge so much faster. It's going to be rear wheel drive. It's going to feel so much more premium because even cheap Volkswagens to me feel like they're way more solidly built than you know, a Bolt would be. And I am so excited about this thing. I think it's going to be a game changer, like Tom hates, but I think it will be. But I think this is going to be it for Europe. You're going to see these on every corner. The charging performance looks wonderful. The interior, I mean, who knows what the real one will look like, but at least the concept looks close to production. They got the right ideas, and I hope they keep the retro gauges that were in that car as well.
That was nice. I liked the little screen actually right in front of the driver. I had like just a small screen, but enough to see your speed and things on, but it's not in the way of your view of the road.
I think it's front wheel drive. You mentioned it's going to be rear wheel drive. I think this is going to be front wheel drive.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have not researched any bit of it. So maybe I like it a lot less now. Sorry.
And I didn't throw cold water on it. I know it sounded like that. I love it. I think it's great. And understand, I was coming at it from kind of an American centric point of view that we have the Bolt here. They don't really, that's not, you know, available in Europe, but this is going to be for Europe. So, you know, I definitely, you know, should point out, I think it's great. It just seemed like my reaction was to the articles that I read, like, finally we have that. And maybe that was a European centric point of view. Yeah, finally, they're going to have
Europe. You have 500.
But the Zoe was really affordable, wasn't it?
But that Zoe kind of sucks because it's air cooled and it's not very premium at all. And it doesn't handle that well. Like, I've done Nürburgring laps in Zoe and we've gotten it up on two wheels. Like,
yeah, but that was not 8 years old. 8 years ago, they were selling the Zoe. You know, I would imagine.
Yeah, but they still are now. I think you can buy one.
I don't think so, right?
Didn't they? Or just up until a couple of years ago. The one I drove was pretty recent. Right. And I don't know. I think it is a big deal for Europe because, you know, you get like the Dacia Spring and then this, and this is a much big upgrade.
Yeah, the Dacia Spring is very minimal, bare bones, kind of no frills kind of car. I mean, it's great for some people, and if it's a great niche, it gets people in, you know, more budget.
And it's basically electric golf, which everyone drives golf there. Yeah.
Right.
We need these sub $30,000 electric vehicles that can go far, like 200 miles, 250 miles that a family can use. You know, that's in order for us to really start to see adoption tick up. We need more affordable electric vehicles because we have great EVs out there now, but you know, they're super expensive, most of them. So, I mean, look at even Kyle, how much does the EV6 GT cost? What's the base price on that?
Well, if you get a base EV6, they're like 40. The one I drove was
60. No, the GT.
Yeah, 62.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you're going to get options and stuff and it's going to be 70 grand. You know, there's so few people in this country really can afford a $70,000 car. I mean, in anywhere. So we really highlight the cream of the cream here, you know, and we're fortunate enough where at least Kyle and I can go out and buy these cars and use them, make videos and then sell them. But that's not reality. Most people don't live in the sphere that we live in. And we need, you know, proliferation of cars, say 35,000 and under, that can suit family needs. And I think we're going to get them. We're going to start getting them between now and like 2025. I think we're going to start seeing them come out from most of the automakers. And this is a good first step for Volkswagen.
And you know what I wish they actually did was to bring what was it called? The ID2 Life. Was that the name of it? The boxy fun one.
Right. I think they scrapped that. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was the best because it looked so great. And it was like a little mini G-Wagon that was about the size of a dinner table. And it was just a box with wheels. It was awesome.
I think it was a step too far for maybe some of the more conservative higher ups in the company. I think that's
a shame.
Yeah. And I think this is kind of taking the place of that, actually, this ID2ALL kind of concept.
Leave it to Volkswagen to make things unexciting very quickly.
Right.
BMW had years ago, I was able to see some things that I think most of the public didn't see back when I was really involved with BMW and their progress. If you remember when the i3 first came out, it was called the Mega City car. That was the code name before right. they named it the i3. They also had CFRP frames and designs for the inner city car and the intra-city car. So the intra-city car was kind of like an i5, bigger. It was almost like a crossover, like Mustang Mach-E type of a vehicle, which was going to be bigger than the i3. And then they had the inner city car, which was a tiny little two-seat, CFRP frame, ultra lightweight, ultra efficient, 5 miles per kilowatt hour back in 2012 when they were designing this, the whole I program, we've talked about this on the podcast before, kind of got reined in, and BMW said, we're going to kick the can down the road for another, once there was a change in leadership in BMW. But if that hadn't happened and they continued with what they were developing, we would have gotten a tiny little, fully electric, super efficient inner city car that would have been so cool. I definitely would have had one of those.
But yeah, that sounds pretty great, actually.
And yeah. But it may have failed because look at Smart in America, yeah. Unfortunately pulled out. But
wouldn't have done well here, Kyle.
Yeah. But it's the cars that well you there. And I love the most.
tiny premium cars is a difficult sell in this market for sure.
Yeah. It reminded me of my old CRX, like the look of it, and I was like, oh God. And I loved my CRX, and that would have been something that I would have jumped right on. And all it would have had to do was make it, because it wouldn't have had long range or a big battery, super small battery, super efficient. The tiny little tall, skinny, narrow tires, like they would have been even more narrow than the i3. Wow. Because this thing was for people that lived in cities right. that just needed to get around the city, and I just wanted it to make it from my house to my restaurant one way. Because I had a charger there and a charger here, and it was 41 miles. And I'm like, okay, if this thing has EPA 55 mile range, I'll do it. Cause I'll drive slow in the winter and I'll make it. But, I was so disappointed when BMW kind of pulled things back and said, oh, we're going to wait a generation before we go all EV. But I hate to say it might've been the right decision for the company. Investment wise, because they were pouring billions into what they were doing with BMW i, with the CFRP frames and the light weighting and the aluminum and all the extensive use. And they were building these the i3. I know we've said this before. It's such an underrated car. It is an amazing feat of engineering. Watch Sandy Monroe's video on that. When he did it, he was drooling over it. He was like, this thing, it's he said something I feel like I got teleported 25 years into the future and I'm looking at a car from the future, what BMW did here. And I know a lot of people looked at it and were like, that thing's ugly. I don't like it. It was an engineering marvel. So I see so many comments about the CRX here on the side. People are commenting, was so cool. Yeah, I had a CRX SI, which was the sport version of it. And I put a nitrous oxide kit on.
I remember you talking about that.
With a 60 horsepower boost, and I drilled out the shifter. So the button was on the top of the shifter. So I had to reach under the dash to turn the tank on. It was a wheel to spin. And once that it was on, the system was operated. Then I had the button on the shifter. And that was so cool. At low speeds, nothing could beat me. I mean, a Mustang 5 liter, a vet, anything. From a street light to street light, the car weighed 1,800 pounds, and I doubled the horsepower that it had, and that was a blast. That was such a cool car.
I just wish you still had that car, because I could just picture you wah, bah, 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 just hitting the NOS button everywhere.
Kyle, if I just got uber rich one day, I swear I would find a CRX SI. And totally restore it and convert it to electric. And I'm sure it's totally doable because of that high shelf behind the two rear seats, underneath there where the gas tank was. I'm sure is enough room for somebody to put a decent sized battery in there and run it. That would be awesome. But probably to do it right, I'd probably be into it for 75 or 80 grand, to really do it right. And that's just I can't spend that money on a project that I'll sell 8 years later for like $5,000.
Right. Yeah. Maybe if you're lucky. Dominic, I just want to add one piece of news that I don't think is on your list.
Sure.
Which is, Martin would be pleased about this. Bollards saving lives. I don't know if you had seen this Citroën AMI go a little bit too hot into a corner in Monaco on the F1 circuit, I believe.
Right.
And rolled over and smashed roof first into a bollard, saving people, by the way.
Yeah, there's people on that sidewalk. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that was awesome.
Bollard struck again.
So I've seen a whole bunch of different clips from like different places, but now there's one where they've like taken all of the video footage and put it into one. So you get the interior views, the exterior views, the climb up the hill. And,
oh, really? It's got all that?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. It's truly one of the best videos online at the moment. I don't think anyone died, so that's good. We can laugh about it. But wow, the Citroën AMI needs a wide body option because that thing is top heavy.
Right,
Kyle. When I first saw it, you didn't see it, but in our team's chat, I sent the link to Dom and Martin and said, "Is Kyle in Monaco?"
Yeah, that's right. Well, that is really something totally, I would do.
That would have totally have been you. It would have been that would have been perfect, you know.
Yes.
And talking about bollards, you know, we talked about the bollard Twitter
World
account
Bollard
last week.
Yeah.
And did you see when I posted Inside EV's podcast, like the link to watch it on Twitter, I tagged them and I was like, you know, we talk about the most important news this week in electric vehicle bollards, you know, and they World of Bollards retweeted.
Oh, that's awesome.
Our thing. And I think they're following us now. So it was funny.
That's great. Well, every episode we need a bollard story then because great. It really was awesome. And the Citroën AMI really looks dangerous, to be honest. That did not look good because they were even getting it so much on the uphill that they were spinning the inside tire, weight was coming off. And then this dude just hucked it into the corner on the way down and it rolled so fast. It was pretty unbelievable. It was great. Great content.
Right. What I'm surprised about is you seem surprised that that happened. Like you were like, it looks pretty unsafe to me, as if you didn't realize that already.
I mean, I don't think
you to realize that thing will tip if you're going 60 miles an hour on.
Because with my smart car, I can be such an idiot and drift it and slide it, and it's fine. Also, I drove in a Mi, but just around
Mercedes engineering.
And, right. But can you imagine, you know, 28 miles an hour and into a hairpin and flipping, though? I don't know.
Well, that he may have actually had a bit more speed on. It could have been a tuned one.
Downhill.
Mm-hmm. But even at 28 miles an hour, yes. I now, after watching that happen and watching the fifth gear test where they got it up on two wheels,
I didn't see that.
A very tippy car. But what's crazy is like that's a car that you can drive without a license.
Right. Well, there's a slower version.
Let's put the youth in the least safe car ever. It's the best car ever, and I think it actually gets even more appeal for me now that you know you can die just from going around a corner. This is amazing. But you really should not be putting the youth in this car.
All right. So Tesla has opened up its very first V4 supercharger. It's in the Netherlands. It's got 16 stalls and it's currently only charging Tesla vehicles and at the same rates as V3. Let me pull up our page on that. We have an article up on Inside EVs showing the site, and that's kind of what it looks like. So these are the new V4 Tesla superchargers that we can see here. They have longer cords, so they should be able to charge non-Teslas more easily than the current Tesla superchargers because non-Teslas have their charging ports at various locations around the car. They're also rated for 1,000 volts and 615 amps, which should be about 600 kilowatts, I believe, when all the power is eventually unleashed. And I do have a picture, actually, of the little stop screen, and let's share this other one on Twitter. So there's an account on Twitter, Esther Kokomans, has a picture up here taken at the V4 supercharger, and it shows the rated voltage 1000 VDC, 615 amps, rated duty cycle 100%, operating temperature is IP54, rainproof, okay, all that. Yeah. So Kyle, have you booked a flight to the Netherlands yet?
I did. And I was going to go and film this, but now I'm not so sure it's worth it, because here's the thing. The actual chargers are no different at this particular site. They're still using version 3 chargers. The actual charging equipment is identical to version 3 superchargers.
So you're talking about the big box behind the pedestals.
Yes. So there'll be no difference to the cars, at least at this moment. All this is a dispenser that is upgraded. They use immersion cooled cables. So it's a longer cable. That's really the big deal here is cable and everything. Already in Europe, superchargers are rated for 1,000 volts on the dispenser side. So there's no big deal there. And you know, the higher current rating is great. What we've seen Tesla doing is they adhere to the current rating, the nameplate rating, for CCS vehicles in the US, at least with Magic Dock. But when you plug in a Tesla, they go way beyond the nameplate rating. They already do 650 amps in the US on version 3 superchargers. So I'm not totally sure this is like the big break we're all waiting for. I think it's the first version for dispenser. As far as I can tell, there's no difference to the charging equipment yet. So I think that will come at some point, is my guess.
Right. Well, interesting. Because I mean,
Tesla tweeted version 4 supercharger. And then like some people went there and I was talking to some friends and we're like, this is no different. And we're all like, yes, this is identical equipment to version 3 supercharging. They use the same max power rating on the cars. It's possible that when they unlock this, they can send more power through the dispensers because of the way version 3 superchargers can send power back and forth between the different cabinets. So that might be it. And it definitely looks to be a nice longer cable. It looks to be the thickness of a version 2 supercharger, but it's fully immersion cooled, which is great. And I think it's definitely not whatever was charging the semi with these mega charger situations. So it's not as exciting as I thought it was going to be. So I'm not sure I'm going to fly over.
Oh. Did you already pay for your ticket?
Oh, yeah, but that's okay. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I can get points.
True. Okay, I'm just pulling something up. So I discovered in my neighborhood, I think I have a V4 supercharger here as well. I'm just pulling up another page here to show y'all. So I'm going to go tomorrow. My big adventure tomorrow is going down towards the coast and checking out this installation. It's not even on the official, let me share this with you, the official Tesla supercharger map. So this is the Tallahassee area that we're looking at. You can see it's got a supercharger here, and they've got a new V3 supercharger just down the road a little bit in, they call that Lamont, Florida, I think they call it. It's just a couple exits down from here. But south down here, there is another supercharger, but it's not here on the map. It doesn't show. But we have members of our local Sustainable Tallahassee Ride Electric Club members who have gone and spotted this and still not opened. So it's got pedestals and they're all covered up. I think it might be fenced off still, this area. But from, you know, all indications, it's a V4 supercharger.
What indications do you have?
Well, one is like the mobile tech that came to visit me.
Yeah.
I asked him about it and he said, oh yeah, I just stopped by there because he had a customer on the coast he was helping. And yeah, I just stopped by there, stopped by the V4 supercharger. oh, V4 you say? So yeah, I'm definitely, and you can tell like the size of them. They look just like the ones that, you know, we saw, you know, in Holland. Basically they're like taller and, you know, rectangles. Yeah. So I'm pretty sure
you better be going every day, start putting some miles on and start filming that process.
Right. Well, I'm not sure
the US will get different chargers than the ones that are in Europe.
Right. See, I'm not sure. Yeah. I'll have to go down and see, what's going on there. So I'll try to have the video up by Sunday if I can. So yeah, that's my project for the weekend.
Okay, great.
Awesome. Okay, so what else do we got to talk about today? Tesla, speaking of Tesla, they turned down $6 million in public funding for superchargers. I thought this was kind of interesting, and maybe we want to talk about this for a second. So the state of California offered them $6 million for supercharger sites to help, you know, put up this big, I think they had some really big installations in particular in mind. But Tesla's refusing the money because there's a stipulation involved that they would have to offer a payment method, a different payment method in addition to the current one of like charging through their app. So if you want to charge a CCS car at a Tesla supercharger now, you have to download the Tesla app and, you know, use that to make your payment through. So there are a ton of opinions about this. And some of them from longtime EV advocates I know are disappointed that Tesla is forcing people to go through its app. But Tom, you're also a longtime EV advocate and have specialized in charging. So what are your thoughts about this?
So I agree with most of the people that I've read that are that think that there should be alternate payment methods. People shouldn't be forced to use an app. I know it works really well, and mm-hmm. I love using the app. And for me, I would always use the app, you know, I whether it's Tesla, even Electrify America. But, you know, we don't, you know, the three of us here, and I don't know what your opinions are, but we don't represent a cross section of Americans and of people that are driving. And so, you know, we have to consider everybody's needs, in my opinion. And there's plenty of people, like, believe it or not, I have a friend who's 52 years old. That's not that old. I mean, it might sound old to Kyle, but it's not, trust me. And he has a flip phone and he refuses to get a phone, like a smartphone.
I have a friend like this.
Yeah. So he just refuses to get any kind of, first of all, he held out from getting a cell phone forever because he didn't want to be bothered. He doesn't want people to be able to reach him whenever they need to and all that stuff. So like this guy virtually can't get, you're telling them if all the charging stations are, you know, you need an app to buy them, he can't get an electric car. And, you know, there's like my in-laws have been talking to me about getting an electric car. They like the new Mercedes SUVs. They've had Mercedes in their family for a while. And I don't know how well they would function with dealing with an app to get their car now to initiate a charger. I know Tesla makes it so easy. You just link it to your card and you plug in. It works. You don't need any payment method because you've done that ahead of time. But, you know, for these chargers that are going to be available for all makes and models, I think there needs to be a payment method outside of an app available if you want public funding so that it can be available for anybody that can just pull up, doesn't have to download an app. What if your smartphone is dead? You know, the battery's not working or whatever. You forgot to take it with you and you need to charge somewhere. You need to be able to pull out a credit card and charge. Could you imagine if gas stations, you needed an app to buy gas at a gas station, you know?
But you know, gas stations do have apps where you can download, they encourage you to download and save
you
money.
You don't need it.
I'm not saying get rid of apps. Of course, use app because most people are going to want to use it through the app, but don't force people to. And that's what basically, you know, Tesla does. So, you know, I understand why they do it. And it's a very elegant solution. It works really well for the people it works for. But if you're going to take public funding, it needs to work for everyone. That's my position.
So here's right. What Tesla should do, in my opinion. Rather than adding credit card terminals to every supercharger, which are right. One of the biggest points of failure in the EV charging industry.
But wait, Kyle, let me interrupt one second. But why are they? They work on gas pumps all the time.
Right.
Yeah, it's mostly environmental damage, water intrusion, heat, sunlight, because they're not under covers.
Canopies.
Right. Yeah. Well, design it so that it's not a problem.
Sure. But here's what I think would work. You're okay. Here's what I think I've seen work really well at that, you know, future charging station in Zusmarshausen that I filmed, the one with the 70 DC fast charging plugs. You pull up to a Tesla supercharger, you take your CCS connection, magic dock. However, you know, I know you have to manually activate it with an app today, but you plug it into your car and it gives you 5 kilowatts and you got 15 minutes and you just walk to a point in the middle of the station, perhaps with a terminal, and you swipe, tap, you know, Apple Pay, whatever you want to do, and Google Pay, and activate that charger from a kiosk in the middle of the charger. charging station. And I think the kiosk method could work perfectly for Tesla. I think it could work perfectly for almost every charging station because you have two or three. They're going to be relatively minimal use because most people will use an app, but you need them available for everyone. They can be a cool point to actually educate EV drivers when they're not in use as to how much power the station's pulling, where's the power coming from, what cars at what percent, so you can shame the dudes at 99%. And I think this could be a really cool communication way to accept payment, but not have to actually use a point of sale on every single terminal that's there.
I like this idea. This is good, actually.
It works really well at this station in Zusmarshausen. They have two, I believe, kiosk points, or maybe just one. But I remember standing in line once, and I was like, okay, we definitely need more than one kiosk here to activate my fast charging. Because as a foreigner, I couldn't actually download that app and get it working. So I needed to use the kiosks. Most people who went there plugged in, activated with their app, and then it went to full power. Need a central pay point, like Nathan is saying. I think this is the best solution for Tesla.
That's interesting. I wonder if they would even consider that, though. I mean, because they're going to turn down. So the big NEVI money is coming out soon. Does that have stipulations that they need alternative payment methods as well in theirs?
It's not as stringent as California.
I see.
And they actually just changed the word, or they more narrowly defined the wording, because the way it was originally written, I think some of the automakers didn't understand if it meant you needed to have this or you needed to have this. Now, there is talk about the necessity to have alternative payment methods, but they don't specify that. And from what I understood from, and I didn't dive in and really read the whole thing, but I read other people that did summaries of it, was that Tesla will be okay with the way that it currently sets up to be able to get the NEVI funding. But I didn't really dive into the deep document and reread the new terminology. And it still looks a little vague to me, to be honest with you.
Sure. And it is also the matter of, maybe Elon can be kind of stubborn. I think when he decides this is the way things need to be, that's the way things are going to be. He doesn't change his mind too often. Well, sometimes he does, but some sticking points like this, he's like, he can be very, blinders on, this is the way it's going to be. But we'll see, because this is $6 million, not a whole lot of money for Tesla, really.
Pennies.
But yeah, it's like pennies, but
for a company like Tesla, that's insignificant.
Right, so they don't need the play.
But the NEVI funding game. Significant.
Overall, it's like $7.5 billion. So like five of that is NEVI, and then there's another program, $2.5 billion, that just opened up, actually, $2.5 billion that just opened up as well, that municipalities and states and other regions can apply for funding from the other pool of money. So, but I like your kiosk idea. That's great. I think Tesla, if you're listening, give Kyle a call. He'll set you up with some more ideas.
They already got my idea.
Okay.
I think it's fantastic also. That would be for specific sites. I don't think it's feasible to have that type of a setup where we have DC, everywhere we have DC fast chargers. Maybe that would be for the specific sites that they go for funding for, and open up some of these centers like that would be fantastic. But, overall, like when there's a parking lot and six fast chargers at a target parking lot somewhere, right along a major highway, I don't think they could then re-engineer and have like a booth there where you'd pay.
I'm just thinking iPad on a stand. Yeah. I think you could just put it between two chargers.
Well, this particular funding was for four sites with a total of 420 charging points. That's a lot of like mega 105 chargers per site, basically.
The perfect type of sites for what Kyle was describing.
Exactly.
How big cool sites with a center where you can go in and get some coffee, get snacks, free Wi-Fi, while your car's charging.
I'm not sure that $6 million could even cover one of those sites.
No, that would
Right. You mean for the kiosk idea?
No, oh, no, not for, the, oh, no, yeah. $6 million of funding might cover like a half of one.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, but it's just, you know, an incentive, you know, it's just, thanks for doing this. Here's a, like a little bit more money to help, you know, whatever, help get it done, help make it happen. Or also maybe get this accessibility. You know, I don't know, $6 million. I think you could, well, you could design and engineer a kiosk for that money, but, or yeah. But you could install it once it was designed.
Anyway, they have enough money going to charging. I think Tesla is just going to dominate the charging space here pretty soon.
Right. They could be a huge monopoly.
I think V4 is just going to be everywhere. And yeah, monopoly.
Yeah. All right. So I think we're up against our time. Yep. We're up against the time. So I think we should probably call it. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. You can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tomology at Tomolog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee when he's here, and then even when he's not here, is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at, it's Kyle Connor. And I'm on Post and Mastodon and other platforms. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.